Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Vision Tulsa will go before Tulsa voters a little less than a month from now, April 5th. The $884 million sales tax program is an extension of the Vision 2025 tax, but differs from that previously passed package in several different ways. First, Vision 2025 was a countywide temporary tax. The Vision Tulsa plan is a city tax. In fact, cities all across the county are having their own vision votes. And along with economic development projects, we'll also include two permanent provisions that add a portion for public safety, 0.26%. They'll add over 150 police officers and over 50 firefighters, and a permanent portion, 0.085%, for transportation issues, both street maintenance and for Tulsa transit operations. The economic development portion of the plan contains Arkansas River development, rehabbing the Zinc Lake Dam, along with constructing another dam at 103rd Street in South Tulsa, a Gilcrease Museum expansion, fairgrounds, convention center, airport, and zoo upgrades, improvements to the city's higher education facilities, and a teacher recruitment and retention initiative in partnership with the city's school districts, to name a few. Last week, we spoke with Vision Tulsa proponents, Councilors Karen Gilbert and G.T. Bynum. Today, we hear from a spokesperson from an organized group in opposition. Citizens for a Better Vision oppose the sales tax, labeling it Vision Forever. George McFarlane is the spokesperson for the group, and he's my guest today on Studio Tulsa. George McFarlane, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me, Rich.
Tell us a little bit about your group, Citizens for a Better Vision, which is opposing the Vision Tulsa vote, a passing of the sales tax extension.
Yes, we are in opposition. We're not a brand new group. We were formed back in 2012 in opposition to, at that time, the Vision 2.0 early renewal of the county sales tax. So we have a core of the same members, not all. Roscoe Turner, who was one of our leaders then, has gone on to a more important job in the hereafter. But we have a leadership team, and we're a grassroots volunteer organization that's opposed to this tax. And we're working in not only Tulsa, but also Owosso, Jinx, and Glenpool are part of this tax. They'll all be voted on April the 5th by the taxpayers.
Each city's citizens will go to the poll to vote for their own part of their vision package, correct?
Exactly, yes. There's a variety of ballot issues in each of the cities. Some have common threads, like Jinx has a low water dam that's an element of Tulsa's construction project. Unlike Tulsa's, Jinx has a cap on how much they're willing to spend. I think it's $16.6 million versus Tulsa's is estimated at $63 million to replace the existing but functional low water dam at 21st and Riverside.
Mm-hmm.
There's no cap on how much can be collected or spent. All the numbers you have before you are merely estimates, mainly mm-hmm. based on what they think they'll collect. The county estimated when the vision tax originally was passed in 2003, called Vision 2025, that they'd have about $585 million in collections. They've over-collected by at least $60 million and are being a little slippery as to how much they estimate they'll finally collect by 12/31/16 when the tax is scheduled to expire.
So at the root of the opposition to the vision plan, what would you say sort of the root idea is? Is it the fact that these numbers aren't laid out well? Is it a philosophical argument? What exactly?
Well, our members are not of one mind. They're from conservative, liberal, Democrat, Republican, independent, libertarian. So they come as volunteers for their own reasons. You know, they may be against government growth because $1 billion in new spending grows government. Or they could be against an individual component. Maybe they believe that we shouldn't waste money spending it on additional police and fire when we've had a 20-year decline in serious crimes that have dropped by half since 1995. So why are we adding 20% more police? Dewey Bartlett, in his first year in office, cut 20% of the police with an assurance of still having public safety. He laid off about 120 police officers indefinitely.
And that was due to budget restraints.
Yeah, they had a budget problem. And so the fire department agreed to take temporary cuts, but the police refused, and he laid off. That was his option indefinitely, 120 officers. There was no threat to public safety. There was no blood in the streets. Gangsters didn't flock to Tulsa to create mayhem. And I didn't see the National Guard patrolling our streets. So he proved that we probably have too many officers. But now they want to add 160 more in an era of declining crime in Tulsa and nationwide.
Well, when you look at national statistics, actually, we're starting to see that 20-year decline bottom out. And in certain cases, some categories are starting to go up. And the last statistics I've seen. Now, whether that is the case, well, I'll just lay out what they're saying right now, is right now our police are going from call to call to call, and they're not able to do any sort of community policing engagement with the community. What's your reaction to that?
By its nature, most police work is reactionary. They can't arrest you until a crime is alleged to be committed. So when we have a change in our Constitution to allow the police to arrest you before they have an affidavit that you've committed a crime, then they may have proactive crime control. Right now, it's very reactionary.
Well, the philosophy is the fact that if they're out patrolling an area, that will certainly reduce the idea of crime because, say, a burglar that's working in a neighborhood, if they see a police car patrolling by on a regular basis in a neighborhood, which is one of the things they're talking about, that will reduce the likelihood of a crime taking place. So your reaction? I see that you're giving me an interesting look.
Well, there are patrol officers, but we have something called technology now. We have surveillance cameras in many businesses and homes. We have the internet where you can monitor your own home alarm system and cameras remotely. We have police forces at OU Tulsa, OSU Tulsa, Tulsa Technology Center, Tulsa Community College, all the Tulsa public schools.
That may not be in the future based on what happens in the next budget.
They have an armed police force in all of those venues. We have the county sheriff's office that patrols as well. They stop cars for violating state traffic laws on state highways here in Tulsa. So I would challenge you that there is a growth in police. So when Tulsa Technology Center or OSU Tulsa has a police force, they're officers on the beat. They're controlling crime. They're reporting crime. They may even make arrests and then turn them over to the police. So that is an augmentation that's not even the Tulsa police staffing numbers.
My guest today is George McFarland, the spokesperson for Citizens for a Better Vision. They oppose the Vision Tulsa package, which will go before Tulsa voters on April 5th. We're just talking about the first of three ballot initiatives that will be a part of the ballot in the city of Tulsa, which is the permanent sales tax for public safety. And two of them are permanent sales tax, one for public safety, one for transportation. Is that an issue for your group?
Well, it'll be a permanent tax increase. Tulsa already has overall sales tax of 8.517. I was thinking as I was driving over here, what did I pay in sales tax when I went to the University of Tulsa some decades ago? I was born here in Tulsa, and growing up, I paid a 3% sales tax, a penny to the city and 2 cents to the state. By the time I was college-aged, it had doubled to 5.98 is what I calculated, a little less than 6%. It's gone up another 50% since then. It's up to 8.5%. Glenpool, which is part of this tax, it'll be on their ballot April the 5th, is already at 9.4%. And besides the two capital project proposals on Glenpool ballot, they're going to have another 0.55 in addition that will bring their sales tax to 9.9%. If the Boren 1 cent sales tax, which is looming for Oklahoma voters to decide in November, their paid canvassers are active all over Tulsa. I've been asked numerous times to sign their initiative petition. If you lived in the little town of Glenpool after the November election, you'll be paying nearly 11% sales tax. To me, that's an affront to the taxpayer. To extract 11% on every sale of goods that are subject to sales tax, and that's not the only tax we pay. I was looking at my annual tax statement from the county assessor. I brought it with me. I already pay 17% of my property tax to the city for bonded indebtedness. Tulsa has hundreds of millions of dollars in outstanding debt. In fact, the big road initiative that we're suffering those orange cones all over Tulsa is brought about by a decision made about three different mayors ago to quit maintaining the roads. That mayor inherited four paving crews, road maintenance crews, that did a life cycle maintenance for the roads. When she left office, there were none. And today, there are no full-time road maintenance crews. We have a 63-person road maintenance department versus used to have over 240. Now we're paying upwards of $1 billion in the Improve Our Tulsa program, which is bonded indebtedness. As I say, I pay 17% of my property tax, 54% to the public schools, 9% to Tulsa Technology, 5% Tulsa Community College. So we have a number of entities that have tax streams that flow to them from property tax. But the vision tax is going to send Tulsa taxpayer monies to entities that are not the responsibility of the city of Tulsa.
For example,
OSU Tulsa is on there for $3 million.
Yes.
Tulsa Community College, $5 million. Tulsa Community College has a permanent ad valorem tax that is 5% on everyone's property tax bill. They get permanent ad valorem, just as does the health department, the library, and Tulsa Technology Center, which gets 9% of my property tax. But the visionaries for the Tulsa Vision Forever tax want to give money to Langston University, which is a state-supported university. But they want to gift $16 million in Tulsa taxpayer money, which the city of Tulsa has no responsibility for Langston. None. Zero. It has no responsibility for Tulsa Public Schools. Tulsa Public Schools, Jinx and Union together, who will be beneficiaries of $14.5 million of this new spending, already have a budget approximately the size of the city of Tulsa. So our visionary leaders here, Dewey Bartlett and the city council, want to give money to entities that are not the responsibility of the city of Tulsa. That is boneheadedly stupid.
Well, they would say that the state is not following their fiduciary responsibility to things like the school district, to various colleges, and funding them properly, that as a community, they have to step up and help fill some of those gaps. I mean, you're looking at budget cuts coming in the coming year to Tulsa Public Schools, to all the local school districts. They're going to be devastating. They're talking about eliminating transportation. They're talking about eliminating all sorts of things. What is the community's responsibility in response to something they can't control at the state level?
Well, our state has a budget hole of $1.3 billion.
No, it's true.
It makes Tulsa Public Schools' little shortfall look like a rounding error. The point is there's a dozen projects on the capital expenditures of the Vision Forever tax that are not the responsibility of the city of Tulsa. The city can throw itself at these entities as a faction to try and attract voters to vote for something that maybe they believe in. Like, there are strong advocates of the Air National Guard, the pilots and the ground crewmen and administrative staff.
And the feeling is that will add overall monies to the coffers by having the economic development associated with having a strong Air National Guard base.
Well, an Air Force general in the Pentagon with four stars on his shoulders decides where F-35 fighters are deployed, who gets them, and when. The Pentagon has a $585 billion budget. Despite Dewey Bartlett's joyride in an F-16 trainer for publicity purposes, the fact of the matter is the Air National Guard is funded by the Pentagon, not by Tulsa. So if they need F-35 trainer facilities, when they decide where F-35 fighters will be deployed, the Pentagon will let the Secretary of Defense know, and he'll let Congress know, not Dewey Bartlett.
Understand. My guest today is George McFarland. He's a spokesperson for Citizens for a Better Vision. That group opposes the Vision Tulsa package that will go before Tulsa voters on April 5th. We talked a little bit about the permanent sales tax for public safety. What about the permanent sales tax for transportation? This has been a woefully underfunded part of the city for a long time, especially our transit system. And when you think of a city that's growing, you have to have adequate transit. public transit. It shouldn't be transit of the last resort. Our bus wait is close to an hour most of the time, maybe 30 minutes on a couple of routes at rush hour. But most of the time, if you have to have a transfer of the bus to get across town, say to go to the Social Security Administration, if you live in North Tulsa, that's half a day to
get. Yes, that's true. Yes.
So what is your feeling about the transit part of the vote?
Well, the MPTA recently figured out that Route 105, Peoria, north and south, carries 20% of the entire ridership of the MPTA bus system. And now they think they may need a bus or two extra with 20% of their entire usage on one route, a route that I use occasionally. I ride the bus from time to time. I like looking at root causes of problems, Rich. Why do we need a permanent tax for road maintenance? Well, what has happened to the city budget, and it was analyzed by a former city councilor, Bill Martinson. He analyzed 40 years of growth in the city budget. What he found was the police and fire budget was eating up the city's budget. It was on a very sharp angle of increase, increasing in a 40-year period from 60% of the 2-cent sales tax for operations to 100%. What that translates to is that every other city department is operating on fees, fines, some grants from federal and state, but most significantly, they're operating on water department profits. If you've looked at your water bill, during Mayor Bartlett's term, they've gone up 43% for water rates and close to 60% for sewage and also stormwater. Mm-hmm. That's a little higher than the inflation rate. So they're funding the departments like Parks Department with water department profits off of captive ratepayers. I mean, I guess you could drill a water well in your backyard. Most people pay for the water service, which has gone up 43% since Mr. Bartlett's been in office.
So what would you like to see, like a complete review of how we're funding city government?
Well, we've spent upwards of $100 million in capital expenditures and operations for a policy, again, instituted by the same mayor who decided to discontinue street maintenance on a police car take-home policy. If you look at major cities across the U.S., it's not a common practice. It's not an unknown practice, but cities that have tried it, like Albuquerque and Denver, dropped it as ruinously expensive because besides the capital cost, you have the cost of gasoline, which
right now is not that bad, but
getting a temporary break. But yeah, when we were paying $3 or $4 a gallon for gasoline to allow the police, who half the police live outside the city, Mayor Bill LaFortune expanded the police car take-home policy to 25 miles outside the city. So you're paying for a police officer to commute to Glenpool or to Manford or Broken Arrow or Owosso and leave his car parked 75% of the week in the driveway or on the street, not getting used, just sitting there.
So you'd like to end that process?
Yes, most cities are not that stupid, but it was done to, as many politicians do, Rich, they want the police and fire union support. And they shovel more and more pay and benefits to the police with you and me paying the freight. It's other people's money, and they want their support. They want their financial support. They want their boots on the ground coming election time. They want their public endorsement. That's not particular to Tulsa. It's all over the U.S. They're a powerful voting faction. They're influential. But over time, Tulsa has too expensive a police department. And they also are thinking in 1959 terms. We have a $2.8 million helicopter. The first one we had lasted 10 days and crashed and killed two policemen back in 1982 when Mayor Inhofe instituted it. Tragic accident. But the point is, we have technology today that other police departments are using called drones. The drones have a civilian use. Police use of helicopters and drones is surveillance only. They're not a firing platform because it would be too dangerous for the public for it to be a firing platform like we use in combat.
Military. Yeah.
It's surveillance. And the drones have every capability and loitering, and they only cost 1/1,000th of the cost. But we're stuck in Whirlybird technology from 1959. with a $100,000 a year policeman flying it, and that's just additional waste, which a $2,000 drone at each of the police substations could be rapidly deployed, they're ready to launch, and it works. It worked for us for decades in surveillance and in other military operations, and now the police are adopting them all over the country, but not in Tulsa. We're stuck in 1959 police thinking.
My guest today is George McFarland. He's the spokesperson for Citizens for a Better Vision. That group opposes the Vision Tulsa package that will go before Tulsa voters on April 5th, a series of three ballot initiatives. One, a permanent sales tax for public safety, which will add police and fire department personnel. A permanent sales tax for transportation, which will add street maintenance and traffic maintenance, as well as adding some permanent money for Tulsa Transit to operate two rapid transit lines, the Peoria route and the 11th Street route. And then the 15-year sales tax for economic development, which includes everything from Arkansas River development to expansion of Gilchrist Museum to a whole list of things. And we haven't really – you've talked about some of the ones where you feel like it's not the city's responsibility, like adding money for Langston or some of the state colleges.
Well, they have a theme song, I believe, for the Vision promoters. It's from the Beach Boys. It's called Wouldn't It Be Nice? Wouldn't it be nice if we gave $9 million to the Air Force, or we gave $15 million to Langston, or we gave $16 million to an out-of-state company to maybe get them to come here? That's called corporate welfare. And wouldn't it be nice? Well, wouldn't it be nice if the real economic development, then this is AstroTurf economic development, because it's merely an income transfer from Tulsa's poor and middle class to a group that will receive a concentrated financial benefit because they like to build things or they like the debt, they like to finance the debt. Those entities, and they're regularly in the news, they will receive, a very small group, this concentrated financial benefit at the cost of Tulsa's 398,000 people. Economic development is if you have more disposable income, which Tulsans temporarily have more from lower gasoline prices. I notice they've crept back.
Unless you're an oil man.
Well, I wish I could say I was. My oil and gas experience is
at the pump.
In the pump and looking at hundreds of oil and gas loans when I had a vocation.
Let me ask you, one of the things that came out of the first vision, the BOK Center, and a lot of beautification in downtown and some projects in downtown, city officials say that has spurred a tremendous amount of private investment in the area. That is, in turn, sort of helped fund the city. It's added sales tax growth. It's added growth to the city coffers to help fund the city operations. People, when they look at the economic development, the projects here are supposed to do the same thing. The Arkansas River infrastructure will help spur private development in and around the river that will add to the sales tax base and the tax base of the city.
When companies like Spaghetti Warehouse or Mexicali Restaurant took a gamble in a downtown that the sidewalks used to get pulled in at 6 o'clock at night, those entrepreneurs gambled their capital and the labor of their employees to make a success in downtown Tulsa decades before they had an arena. There are many other venues in downtown Tulsa that started and continued before the arena was ever built. It's a matter of which comes first, the chicken or the egg. The same type of politicians in Oak City claim that maps caused a redevelopment. No. Other entrepreneurs like Piggy's Restaurant and Mexican Restaurants and several others started their brick town in the 80s, and later maps capitalized on that. So it's a matter of which comes first, the chicken or the egg.
When you're talking about Mexicality and Spaghetti Warehouse, those were outliers in downtown for a long time. Now, they stayed open. They were successful. But you can't deny the fact that since the arena was built, there has been a huge spate of development since that point. And it's created jobs, and it's created sales tax for the city.
Well, my reaction is businessmen make business decisions based on gambling their capital and their bank's capital, and based on what they think they'll get a rate of return. If the BOK arena, which is sort of isolated and surrounded by mostly government buildings, I would not call that an economic engine. It is a siloed facility surrounded by government buildings that are not, they are, the government buildings are tax consumers, not tax providers. They don't provide tax. The BOK arena has employees, yes, so do the casinos, but they don't provide tax. Businesses provide the tax. They provide taxes on wages. They provide property tax if they own the building. So they pay a variety of taxes. It's not determinable precisely what is the economic impact of an arena. It's an entertainment venue. That may be a genesis of many wonderful things, but it also is a project that had enormous cost overruns, which potentially these projects, like the low water dams especially, they're some of the largest pieces of this project, and that we have a history in public projects in Tulsa and elsewhere that they have enormous cost overruns. The BOK arena had at least a 30% cost overrun, so that potentially the voters could be paying much, much more for these projects, just as the BOK arena had a 30% overrun.
Very quickly, we're about out of time. Is there a better way for the city to attract economic development other than this idea that the government can provide sort of a launching pad for private entrepreneurs to capitalize on city spending to provide more benefits to the community as well as the city? Is there a better approach in your mind?
Yes, it's called capitalism. Well, I've studied it here at the University of Tulsa. If you allow capitalism to excel, it will provide prosperity. The government only has two sources of money, to borrow it or to tax it. That's merely an income transfer. They are not the genesis of economic development in America.
Yes,
it is private enterprise.
But when they spend that money flips around over and over again, and it adds prosperity to community.
When they spend the money rich, they have to take it from taxes or borrowing. The government generates no money of its own. They tax you and me so that you and I have less disposable income.
Well, no business does that either. They take in money. They borrow money. They sell products. It's the same thing. It's transfers.
Well, it's voluntary with a business. If I choose to walk into Academy and buy a pair of tennis shoes versus walking into Famous Footwear, that's a choice I make. When I pay my property taxes to the county treasurer, that's not voluntary. And when I'm extracted 8.5% on every time I buy a loaf of bread, that's certainly not voluntary. They're very different. The government is an overhead to society. It's necessary, but its cost is spread among so many people that they are often not united to say, we're paying too much taxes. It's consuming too much of what we have in disposable income.
Thanks very much for your time, George. We're out of time.
Rich, it's been fun. It's good to be back to my alma mater.
George McFarland is the spokesperson for Citizens for a Better Vision, a group opposing the Vision Tulsa sales tax extension, which will go before Tulsa voters on April 5th. Last week, we spoke with Vision Tulsa proponents, City Councilors Karen Gilbert and G.T. Bynum. You can hear that interview, as well as this interview, again, if you'd like, at our website, publicradiotulsa.org. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.